All right, we're on. Hello, everybody. I'm Devin. Scott, thank you for joining us again. This is the second time. You're the first gentleman who's actually been kind enough to speak with me twice. So
wow.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Yeah, man. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Devin.
How's everything
going? Oh, it's good. Just adjusting to Reno life.
Yeah, that's right. You're in Reno now. Did you, the last time that we had talked about Reno as a place that you were going to move to, you were saying you were looking at talking to REMSA for employment. Has that panned out? Are you working for REMSA?
Yeah, I've been working for them for about a month and a half. So I got hired as a paramedic, and I'm still in my training process with them. So, you know, it's going good. I'm working two 24-hour shifts out in one of the hard posts, so it's like kind of out of like the city, but they're moving me into the city soon. Then I'll finish my training there, and then yeah.
What do you mean about the city? They're moving you in or out of the city? I don't understand.
Yeah, so like they have these things called hard posts that are kind of on the outskirts of Reno. They're still in the city, but they're not. They call it out of system. And they do two 24-hour shifts. And then in the system, you work 4/12. So it's just kind of how they operate. In the system is a little more busy than out of the system. So you have more call volume, and that's why you work 12s instead.
Are you in the 911 system, or are you doing IFTs more so?
It's all 911. There is IFTs built in. But we have a company called CareFlight that's attached to REMSA that they do critical care transports. So they have like a critical care paramedic and critical care nurse on a ground rig. And they also have helicopters that run the same.
Okay. LifeFlight is contracted with, or is a subset of REMSA? I've heard of LifeFlight, but I didn't know that they were.
It's CareFlight.
CareFlight, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So they are a part of REMSA.
I see.
I'm not sure. It's like two different corporations, but they're together.
Sure.
So I'm not sure exactly how that works, but
how far into the Tahoe, geography do you guys go?
We're most of Washoe County.
Okay.
So it's like, it's pretty big. It's a pretty big area.
Right.
So there's like there's one helicopter that is out of Truckee, and the ambulances don't really operate over there unless we intercept from another unit. Right. But most of the time, like Truckee Fire is ALS and they transport. So they'll bring patients all the way over. We can intercept patients from Susanville.
Okay. That's far north of you guys, huh? Or maybe I guess it's not that far north, is it?
It's pretty far. But then like actual north goes way up to, I forget the name of that town, but it's pretty far north. And then it goes all the way south, you know, past Carson City. We can go down there.
Into
California from Mount Rose Highway.
Right. Do you guys interface with Lake Tahoe Fire?
Not North Tahoe Fire, but North Lake Tahoe.
Okay, yeah, I don't know the difference. The only reason I bring that up is that was who Homewood would transport to. That was the handoff from Homewood Mountain Resort. So I call.
Yeah, so Homewood, that would go to North Tahoe Fire. And that's in California, you know, like Tahoe City.
Right.
And then there's North Lake Fire that's in an incline in Nevada.
Okay, sure. For people that don't know, Lake Tahoe is an interesting part of the West Coast because half of it is in California and half of it is in Nevada. It's this giant alpine lake, very beautiful, awesome skiing. And so, yeah, man. Well, good for you. Because I remember you were you were waiting to hear back from them and wondering what was taking them some time, but they just took their time in doing their recruiting, huh?
Yeah, I kind of missed an orientation. They had it filled up, so I had to wait a month. And then I was working with my homie in Tahoe doing rock work. So we were making like retaining walls with giant boulders. You know, we'd go fill up a trailer with boulders, you know, a few tons each load. Just like pick them up with our hands, you know, and use a dolly to bring them up a driveway and lay them in place. And then we made some cool stairs that had like rocks in the front and then concrete with railroad ties. Stuff like that, which was good, you know. I was making pretty good money with him, and the weather was still nice at that time, so it was cool.
How do you
did some tile too?
I'm sorry.
Did some tile too.
Nice, man. How did you guys go and get those kinds of contracts? Is he a tradesman? Is he a mason?
Yeah, second generation stonemason in Tahoe. Wow. His dad did it. Now he does it. Doesn't have his contractor's license. So all the jobs we get are like word of mouth and stuff. And he's doing some work right now over there making like polished concrete countertops and did a tile job. So basically just he knows friends in the area that recommend him for a certain job. And, you know, people in Tahoe, they always are improving upon their houses. And it's like never ends, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, it works. It works for him, and yeah,
dude, I'm gonna grab sunglasses really quick because my eyes look bloodshot as a motherfucker. But they're just right here. Give me one sec.
Yeah.
All right. So now we can be like the Blues Brothers.
Perfect.
So that's super neat, dude. My grandfather who passed away recently was a general contractor, and about the closest I've ever gotten to working with stones or concrete was he was breaking a bit of the concrete driveway at my mother and stepfather's old house with a fucking giant steel or, you know, iron like chiseled beam. I don't know if you've ever seen what they use for that work or if you've used that. They're heavy as fuck. It was like 50, 60 pounds, maybe more. And the man was just fucking, you know, just breaking concrete. And he must have been 70 at the time. And I was like a 20-something-year-old, you know, punk kid. And he's like, here, try this. And I fucking did it like twice and did it wrong. You feel me? Like if you hit a baseball wrong or if you hit a golf club wrong. And my whole body just like shook. And I was just like, oh, yeah, that's hard work.
Yeah, no doubt, dude. No doubt. It's a lot. It's like you'll get in some good shape doing stonemasonry work. It's carrying rocks around and shit like that. But yeah, those breaker bars, they're
like breaker bars, that's what they're called.
Breaker bar, yeah. We use them a lot and that kind of stuff for leverage and moving rocks and a whole bunch of shit like that, digging.
Right.
But yeah, dude, definitely. If you hit them and they start vibrating, they're powerful.
Yeah, they shake your bones. You know what I mean? They don't shake a muscle or, you know. Yeah. The hands, they shake the fucking skeleton, you know?
It's probably good for, like, circulation, you know? I mean, like, loosen things up in there, like, everything.
Yeah.
All of your connective tissue.
Yeah, man. The thought that I get that I want to share is it's so fucking easy, from my perspective, to discount the intensity and level of mastery out there for the trades.
Because, oh, yeah.
You feel me? I grew up in a community in the Bay Area. I think you did too. I could be wrong, but I was insulated from the experience of working with my hands for the majority of my life. And it wasn't until I became a person out on my own that I explored the interest in craftsmanship and you know, apprenticeship in different trades, and I'm no great tradesperson. That's not my point. My point is, I get it now. Like, if you can do something, you know, if you can build a fucking driveway, if you can pour concrete, if you know how to mix concrete, if you know how to make stairs, if you know, you know, the list goes on and on. You have real value. And that's something I think, I mean, just to take my highfalutin opinion to the next logical step, I think that's something that's lacking in certainly where I came from and the narrative that was told to me as a young person, what I was given as a roadmap for success in the world. It's like, get a degree, be, you know, be a fucking manager, and, you know, all that other stuff is a waste of your time. And the older I get, it's like, that couldn't be more wrong.
Yeah, it's very valuable from making money and saving money. You know, like, we all have to at some point have something made, you know, and whether you make it yourself or you pay someone to make it, you know, if you're able to make it yourself, you're saving a lot of money. And
I like how you're saying that.
Yeah. And like in times like these, you know, say you get laid off from your job or whatever, like if you know how to build some shit, like you could find work.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it's definitely, and it's cool building stuff. You know, it's like you always are running into problems, but you're always figuring out ways to solve them. And, you know, it takes being clever and intelligent. You know, people think that like guys that work building stuff are kind of dumb, you know, but it's like not true. They're really smart. They just like, you know, school's not for everyone, you know. Don't get in your degree, and it's not for everybody, that's for sure.
Bro, so, I did it and it wasn't for me.
Yeah. But I mean, I think there's a place for school, you know, like you need to go to school a certain amount to where it ties in with what you're doing. So then you can, you know, get promoted or get a job in a company that you wouldn't be able to without a little bit of school, like, you know, a trade school, let's say, like welding or whatever, you know. Like, I think it's important to do that, but it doesn't mean you need to go get, like, you know, a bachelor's degree or a master's degree. You know, you just get, like, what's important for your, you know, goal.
I hear that.
Yeah.
Quote that comes to mind is, in theory, practice and theory are the same thing. And the I see in abstraction, like the conceptual framework that we're talking about, is the difference between studying things and doing things.
Yeah.
And doing things is the world of practice, is doing a fucking thing and learning through what it actually is and getting the muscle memory and the knowledge of thinking laterally through problems and tangibly creating something. And then there's the idea of academia, that if I can just have make a book on it, then all of this is a waste of my time. And that's wrong. And yeah. I think it's an interesting point. Like, you know what it is to learn a trade. And for me, I think it came from the natural world. Like, surfing and skiing gave me that respect for practice more than just about anything else. And then that has been something that has bled through into, you know, trying to get down my protocols for emergency medicine. Lord knows it's hard to get those fucking things through my head, you know? Like, I love to stay in the theory world as opposed to understanding, okay, this is the situation, this is the patient, this is the set of vitals, what's the next move, you know? And it's like, I can sit here and bullshit for 25 minutes about the conceptual framework, but understanding practice is a different thing. And so I think that that's a really valuable message to be told to young people, because the con, I would argue, that can happen from the world of theory is like, just pay me all your money, give me your future financial freedom, and I'll give you a piece of paper that says you're good at things. And that's a real dangerous bargain for young people, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there needs to be a combination of the two. Right. You know, because like you can, it's good to learn things in a classroom setting before you do them, so you understand, you know, the basics, and you understand it enough to when you start practicing it and you're out there doing it, you can like look back on the things that you learned and be like, oh, okay, this relates to what I learned. So, you know, I kind of know what to do, but that's not the only way to do it that you learn. You know what I mean? Like the person that taught you how to do something, you know, he taught you how to do it in his way or their way, you know, and there's so many different ways.
Right.
And, you know, it's just like, you don't really learn something until you do it.
I hear that.
You learn so much by just doing stuff.
Right. So for me nowadays, and I'm curious where you're at with it, but I imagine you're on the same tip or even farther along on the path, if you will, is how do you implement habits and strategies so that you are doing what you should be with your time? Like, how do you stay away from wasting time psychologically? Like, what I'm getting at is, with this extra time because of COVID and everybody's off and I've got extra time in the house, I've been doing these workout videos. And I just have made a commitment to like, okay, I'm going to put out a video a day. Like, what habits do you put in place so that you're, you know, learning and you're practicing?
I don't know. I feel like I just do me. Like I don't really have any habits really. I just kind of, you know, be sitting down, watching TV, and I'll be like, oh, I'm going to look this up or look that up because I remember I wanted to the other day when I was at work or whatever. So, like, I'll just, like, spend half hour looking some shit up that I wanted to, you know, or I'll make some food that I thought about making, you know, or I'll, like, you know, just do things that I think most of the time when I have motivation to do things is when I'm working. It's like, oh man, I can't wait till I'm not working so I can actually do things that I want to do, you know?
Right.
You know, like that's when I have these creative ideas running through my head. It's so weird. But then like when I'm home and I'm just chilling or whatever, you know, it's like my creative ideas don't really flow as much as if, you know, I'm not. It's like the grass is always greener type thing. But I don't know. I don't really have habits like that. I just kind of like do my thing, and you know, if I want to watch TV for 5 hours, I'll watch TV for 5 hours, you know. It's like whatever.
What creative ideas are you having recently?
I'm just talking with like coworkers and stuff, and you know, religion versus universal, you know, frameworks of life itself. Just kind of interested on like, how did the universe start? You know, like what is the Big Bang, and you know, how did something so vast come from one singularity? You know, in such enormous speed. You know, I was really interested on the beginnings of creation. You know, just kind of always is something I've thought about as intangible. You know, because it is. You know, even if you're the biggest astrophysicist there is, like, we don't know everything yet, and we probably will never know everything. And the more we learn, the more we realize we were wrong, you know, just like anything in life. So it's just really fascinating to me, and, you know, I like to see perspectives, different perspectives, but, you know, that's what I'm going on right now.
I love it, man. That, you're speaking my language now. Let's get into cosmology. Let's get into philosophy, psychology, and religion. I've taken a deep dive myself, and yeah. I think that we can both agree on the shared premise that there's no guru, there's no fucking, there's no authority, there's only collected bodies of evidence, you know, of experimental evidence that can be pointed to build theory. And then there's people that have had experiences, right? And I've delved into both worlds. And first of all, like, what precipitated you being interested in things as lofty as the Big Bang? Like, where did that intrigue start? I'm curious. But then I'll go on my diatribe.
Everything started with that. So, you know, to understand something, you gotta go to the beginning, right? Like, see how it evolved over time, like, we want to look at, you know, life on Earth, like, we got to go to the beginning. What was the first life, right? You know? So it's the same thing as in the universe. So it's only makes sense to me to go to there. But
yeah, I feel you. Where did we come from? Like, right? Like, if we're concerned so much about where we're going, where the fuck did we come from? Yeah, I get it. It's a physics problem, or it's a vector, you know? Dude, I love it because, like, I don't have any answer, obviously, but
like, it's like, I'd rather have questions that I cannot answer than answers I cannot question.
Amen. You know what I mean? Amen. Yeah. So. If somebody's preaching dogma, get as far away from that person as you can get. If somebody's making you question shit, that's an interesting person. Yeah. So, like, I read this, a really cool short story, and it's online. It's free. It's by Isaac Asimov, who's a very, very famous science fiction writer. And Isaac Asimov also was like a university professor, like a brilliant guy. He wrote Stranger in a Strange Land, the Foundation Trilogy, like a lot of, like, honest to goodness, like, top 10 best, you know, science fiction books ever. And that, like, in a factual sense, each year, the, like, Guild of Science Fiction Writers vote on the best book of that year. And also, like, the readership, whomever is registered, you know, in the same way that, like, the Academy Awards work, right, I assume, like, people that are in, like, positions of being able to vote on these kinds of things, vote on the science fiction best book of the year. Isaac Asimov wrote, like, 5 books that have received both awards the year that they came out. It's the Hugo Award and the Nebula Award. And, like, some books win one or the other, right? But, like, it's rare that a book wins both. Ender's Game, and, you know, the list of those winning books are like a who's who of the great science fiction stories. Anyway, Isaac Asimov wrote like an essay, like a short story, and it's called I don't know if it's the last question or the final question. And it's fucking wonderful. And it's like trippy, and it's like 10 pages, takes you 5 minutes to read. It's no big deal, but it's really wonderful. And it's not so much about just like discussing or delving into the concepts of the Big Bang. It's about, okay, we know, right? We like to think that we know, let's say that.
Yeah.
That entropy is a thing, okay? The movement towards dissolution, chaos, you know, from order to chaos, the collective lowering of the energetic state of the system is entropy. So, like, right, like temperatures normalize, like things that are built will break down, that kind of thing is a manifestation of entropy. So in physics, in Newtonian physics, we see entropy is always happening. Even though order may be happening someplace, more disorder is happening other places to make that happen, okay? Well, then the argument becomes, over a certain amount of time, the universe is just gonna dissipate into a cold nothingness. There's going to be no electronic energy ever anymore after the entropy plays that out. So the question is, like, what next? So, like,
yeah, what happens to all the matter?
Yeah, right. So, like, I won't go into the story, but like, yeah, like, what? Like, once the stars burn out, once, you know, like, if energy dissipates, where does the new energy come from, right? Over, you know, time to the n spans of time, right? Like time as it just propagates into perpetuity. So, like, that's a really beautiful story because he's a brilliant guy. Okay, Isaac Asimov is brilliant. Anybody who's read his work, or you can look it up on Wikipedia, he was a brilliant guy. The story in its thesis to that question, as it plays out in like a science fiction short story, because it's like it'll be a short scene in like one time, and then it'll be like 10,000 years later, and it'll be a short scene, you know, a couple, you know, dialogue back and forth, and then like a million years in the future, you know what I mean? And each time the people are different, right? They've like evolved. The thesis that he comes up with borders on spirituality, religion, metaphysics, like woo-woo shit. It's like, it's poetic. It's beautiful in the way that it answers the question. And so why I bring that up is when you talk about these big questions, like let's look at where we came from. Let's look at like what physics tells us and what the people that are studying this shit tell us and what does it actually mean. And like, we should be able to digest that if we're going to ask ourselves the big questions about our own life, like where we're going. And I get it. I think I would say that being around life and death, the way that you are doing as a productive member of our society, as an emergency medical professional, as a paramedic, I think precipitates these kind of deep internal questions because you are faced with these real inextricable facts of life, things that are beyond perception and point of view and perspective. Like when a person dies, they die. That's it. That's a reality. And so it begs the psychological examination of all of the actual realities that we find ourselves in. So here's what I'm getting at. My thesis in an answer to your question that has worked for me, that has gotten me to move forward, right? From my own place to like, you know, in a direction of attempting to develop myself, is that when we go deep enough into theory, we come out the other side in practice. When we delve into these deep questions, we come out the other side breathing correctly. We come out the other side with more respect for our friends and family. We come out the other side with more conviction in our chosen, you know, professional lives, in the way that we want to be of service. Like, if you go into theory to a certain point, you become like an academic. And you like make a paper and you name some medical procedure, right? How funny is it how many fucking doctors' names are on parts of anatomy, interventions, you feel me? Like things that have been discovered in medicine in a way to try to like solidify their place in theory. When it's like, how much vanity is there in medicine? Jesus Christ, right? Bex triad, pushing, you feel me? Like, oh, I could go. So my point is people that have stopped in the conceptual dive have solidified, but you're going as deep as you can, right? I think you come out the other side. I think you come back to yourself. I think you start becoming a better dude if you start asking yourself questions you can't answer.
Yeah, it's just, I think you try harder in the end because you understand that, you know, life is short and life is good and you can make it better by being, you know, more involved or by, you know, having a better perspective. Like it kind of just rubs off on other people as well. And, you know, if you do research, like all the great minds have and they discover amazing things, it's like that helps all. And, you know, like everyone still always talks about Einstein and all of his theories. And it's like that dude's been dead for a long time. You know, Isaac Newton, like all these great minds, like they've been dead a long time. But what they discovered and what they put out there never dies, you know.
That's so cool.
I'm sure that they made many sacrifices to do that.
No doubt. Takes energy.
Oh, yeah. And, like, almost a mania, I would, you know, assume, for those type of brilliant minds, you know? Like, okay. I don't have that kind of mind, so I'm never going to, you know, discover things like that. But I am trying to discover life in a better way, you know? My own life, you know, my family's life, my friends' lives.
That's beautiful, man. I mean, what an honorable place to find yourself where you see the sanctity of life and relationships. And believe me, I've deluded myself out of that place many, many times. And it is a fucking right cross to my chin when I feel it. Because instantly I realize all of the shitty things that I've done to my family. Every time I've been the lesser man in friendships, ways that I can be nicer to my spouse, like it all is right there when I feel what you're talking about. And that's beautiful, man. That's beautiful. I don't think that, I mean, look, I don't have access to the way that anybody else's mind works, right?
Obviously. Right.
Like, as much as I like to think that I can be empathic at the best of times, like, I like, clearly, just as a premise, only have access to my own thoughts, feelings, perceptions. And I think that everybody can have that kind of mind. But again, I only have access to mine. But bro, I have struggled many times very acutely in my life with the nature of my own mind. And, you know, it's something that I could go into as much detail as you like, but it's not important. But what relates to the fact at hand is it's something that can work for me, you know, and it's something that can work against me. And finding that mechanism, learning how to use the firing, you know, that's going on all the time in a way that is like conscious, in a way that is directed, like towards my goal or aim, and towards a way that is respectful of like everybody and everything, has been the great work of my life. And
yeah, and you're just gonna get better at it, you know what I mean? Like, once you figure it out, like, you, and then you realize like how much better your interactions with other people are, you know, how much better like everything is, like, once you figure it out. And it's just, it's not hard, it's just being kind, you know, being open to things, you know, not being so closed-minded and like stuck in your ways. Like, being able to just talk to some stranger or talk to your best friend who has a different view of something and just listen and be like, okay, I can put myself in your shoes and I can understand why you are feeling like this. I may not feel like that. I may not agree with, you know, everything, but it's like, I understand. And then once you allow yourself to just like get it and become so much easier, then you're no longer fighting yourself, fighting with others,
right?
Being negative. Like, that's like, it's like so simple when you break it down. Like, be positive, be kind, love people, you know, help people. It's like, if you do all that stuff, it's going to be, your life's going to be better. It's super simple. But when you find yourselves in these dark times from, you know, trauma or death or disability, illness, you get into a dark place, you get negative. And then all of a sudden, everything goes to shit. So it's like, you can see the inverse relationship happen. You know, it's happened to me. It's happened to probably everybody in life. That's how life goes. It's like this, you know?
Right.
So, but like, when you look at it, it's like, oh, when I was negative, a lot of things were negative in my life. When I was positive, a lot of things were positive in my life, you know? So stay positive, even if it's hard. Because it's only going to get worse if you be negative.
That battle that you speak to is a really interesting point, I think. I have like the lesbian haircut going.
Yeah, so do I. I can't get my haircut though. It's closed.
But you feel me? Like, realizing that there's no need to fight internally is a really beautiful awareness to come to, as opposed to if I just fight my, you know, impulse or my negative feeling or my judgment or my this or my that. Well, the fight itself creates tension, right?
Yeah, but, let go. Do some breathing exercises or something. Yeah, that's what I do when I'm super stressed. Do some deep breathing exercises, and just kind of levels me out, dude. Like, I think it really like gets rid of like cortisol, you know, like the actual hormones in your body that are making you feel that way, that are making you feel tired, angry, upset. Like, if you can kind of just balance out your endocrine system, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to feel better. You're going to release endorphins. You know, you're going to change your body's chemistry just through a conscious effort and a physical action, you know?
That's right.
And think positive thoughts, you know? But I think people that have a problem with, you know, being negative and getting stressed out need to find a way physically, you know, like, you, like, if you have problems like, you know how to deal with them. You go on a bike ride, you know what I mean? You do a physical thing, and then that in turn helps you mentally.
That's right.
Consciously as well, throughout the process. You know, you may start your bike ride being pissed off and like, oh, this sucks. My legs hurt, and like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm not going as fast as I should. But then by the time you get done, you know, you can see yourself building to a better spot. Then you're done. You're like, oh, I'm done. Now I feel good.
That's right. Yeah. So, I couldn't agree more, man. That's been.
For some people, it might be art. It might be drawing a picture, you know. It might be playing a video game that they love or, like, whatever, you know. It's like you just got to find that thing that you can just get in your flow state. Reset. Super important, because if you don't, then you're just going to be a freaking hamster on the wheel and you're going to get burned out, and your wheel bearings and your little hamster wheel are going to light on fire and shit. You don't want that.
I think a commitment to the activities that we find flow state within is extremely important. And so I make the commitment to doing, you know, basically one of those activities each day.
And yeah.
It's a transcendent experience. I mean, it's an experience where I get to be in a different version of myself, like a better one for a time.
Yeah, and that's through just conscious. It's, you're not taking any mind-altering, you know, substances. You know, you're not like eating acid or smoking DMT, you know what I mean? Like, you're just doing a conscious effort to change your state of mind.
Right.
And I think that's like, that kind of exercise is really important, because that allows you to deal with a stressful situation. You know, if you have that state of mind where you can like change your state of mind, and you know you can, and you believe that you can, then any kind of external influence isn't going to dictate how you act.
Feel that.
That's important in a lot of stuff that we do. It's important dropping in on a sick line that if you mess up, you know, you might wreck on some rocks and, like, you know, really fuck yourself up. And then now you got to get airlifted off the mountain and shit. It's like, that's a big consequence. But if you know how to put your mind in the right place, you can have fun riding that line, you know, and not get fucked up or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, that flow state is what's so intoxicating, right? Like, even without, you know, any kind of drug, other than being in the, you know, capital T moment is really a more direct experience of the self, right? And it's like, that's one of the things that has helped me a great deal in growing up. That is to say, define oneself or be defined. And if I can be in myself now, then it doesn't matter what anybody says about what I did, because guess what? I'm still doing shit. The next thing that I'm about to do will continue to affect my definition. So it's an invocation of one's own power over their life. And it's one that a person makes for good or ill, right? Like, it's not just like, look at me, I'm so great. It's like, I'm here now, and I take responsibility for my thoughts, my words, my deeds, and, you know, so forth. It's a returning to the center. It's a returning to the self. It's a restart. It's another big bang, because your action, one's action from flow state, ripple laminarly into eternity. They're not turbulent. They don't dissipate. There's no entropy in truth. Truth exists, and it propagates at the speed of light, right? Like, it's just, that's what's real. And yeah, man, like, I have more access to that wisdom from challenging myself physically than just about anything else. That's been the biggest door, the most, you know, welcome passage into life itself. And it's one of the reasons why I take my health and fitness and you know, training extremely seriously. And it's like, I have that voice that's like, what the fuck? You're not a pro sports person. You have no reason to, you know, hold yourself that high. You know, I have that detracting voice as loud as anybody does. But when I do it anyway, that voice works for me. That voice is like, you can't do three laps on the mountain. There's no way you could do three laps. And so then I say, I'm doing three laps. Like, and you're coming. So save your fucking breath. And it's been a beautiful thing because it's been a place that gives me heart for the rest of my life. You know, my relationships, my work, my myself. So yeah, man, I am really motivated to try to give that wisdom to as many people as I can. I've been coaching and training more so recently, others, and I intend to continue to do that. Not because I have the way, not because I'm so great, because I've been through what we're speaking to, and God willing, I can light that fire in somebody else to do that themselves, right?
Yeah. It's fun just to experience things you like doing with other people. I like doing it too. You know, meeting new people, just kind of being, you know, going to do something fun.
You gonna jump off any waterfalls?
Not recently. I haven't been doing anything really fun like that. Yeah. So that kind of sucks, but I'm dreaming of it. That's for sure. You know.
What are your plans?
Just have fun again, my friends, once this is all over. Yeah.
Are you guys on lockdown?
Yeah. Just, you know, I could go up to the hills and, you know, go do a little hike, snowboarding stuff, but I don't know, man. Maybe I will.
You should.
I did it like a couple weeks ago. We went up and did some laps. It was pretty fun.
You guys still have a good amount of snow? What would be the mountain that you would go to? Rose?
Yeah, up there somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know, man.
It sounds like, you know, 48 hours in a week is a lot of hours. So you're putting a lot of your energy, I would imagine, into your work.
Yeah, I mean, I still have, you know, a few days off.
Right. So
it's just more about finding some friends to go with me, you know, especially this time, like with all the snow. Like, I don't want to get in a bad situation by myself. It's not worth it to me, you know. So, you know, most of my friends live in Tahoe. You know, I got one buddy over here that goes and does that stuff with me, but he's like working during the week and stuff, so just not a lot of people to go with is the main problem, you know?
Sure, sure.
But
dude, Central Oregon is pretty epic with respect to backcountry skiing. Tumalo is the shit. Have you seen those Tumalo videos?
Yeah, pretty deep.
Dude, really fun. Speaking of dangerous situations, I almost got fucked. I broke off a wind lip and it slid a little bit. Thankfully there were no, you know, there was no persistent instabilities. There was no slab on the bowl, but the fucking cornice went. So that was a thing. But bro, I'll go ski with you anytime. Just let me know. You know, I can come to you easier than asking you to meet me up here. So I would go do Rose or something if that was a good move. I don't know if we're going to have any more snow, dude. I think that our winter's finally over, huh?
I don't know. We just got some here like last week, freaking dumped. So there's enough snow for, you know, spring skiing.
Right.
Sure. That's hopefully they reopen the resorts like in a couple months. That'd be sick.
Right.
I wonder if it's gonna happen though.
You know, can you imagine if they did like a 1 week just fucking free for all everywhere? There's no way that they will, but maybe some mom and pop spots, you know?
Yeah, it'd be pretty detrimental to all of our, you know, progress, staying home.
Yeah. But,
man, I was looking so forward to spring skiing at Squaw, dude. Like, man.
You got a pass, to Squaw Alpine or?
I have the Icon pass. So.
Icon pass? Nice.
So like, I used it pretty good before they closed, but I mean, they still had months and months of freaking riding when they closed. They just got like 9 feet of snow the day before they closed. So,
dude, we got lucky. We went to Brazil to visit Izzy's parents, and I was like, well, fuck, like I missed all of March. Like, you know, I missed the best skiing. And we come back and it dumped. I was like, wait, what? Like it's April and we just got 2 feet. Dude, we got like 4 feet in 2 days, like fresh, like, you know, it compacted way down. But that was that one day where it was super, super good. Yeah, man, we came back to a winter, which was nice. Did Squaw give you guys a discount?
No.
Fuck.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
You might get a discount on next year's pass.
Yeah.
Sometimes
I'm planning on going back to Reading. Me and my wife are gonna probably move back to Reading in 6 months or so.
Nice.
So I'll probably just go back up to Shasta, dude.
You might get the real estate market at the perfect time with all of this COVID sell-off. I don't know if you can buy a house, but it might be a good time. Who knows?
Yeah, we're probably going to buy a place. Yeah, we'll see what it does. I don't think it's going to affect the market a whole lot, you know, the housing market, but it probably will on more expensive homes. You know, like $500,000 around that is probably going to affect those houses. But like, you know, a couple $100,000 houses, probably not going to affect those too much. But yeah, dude, I'm stoked to go back to Reading, man. Like I have a lot of friends there and family. And, you know, I just love that area. I love going up to Lassen, Shasta, and Whiskey Town. Just the coast is right there. Like it's a good spot, man.
I love it too, bro. Reading is, I mean, less so Reading for me, but more so all of the surrounding areas. So Trinity Lake is a real special place for our family. Bro, Shasta like changed me. Like I no nonsense fell in love with Mount Shasta.
Yeah.
Still think about her, you know, like that mountain is so special for sure. Like for those who aren't familiar, Mount Shasta is the seventh most prominent mountain in the world, and at a 14,000 foot height, it has just about every kind of, what would you call it, like environment that you can get on a mountain, like up to the, you know, Himalaya. Like it's got many glaciers, you feel me? It's extremely tall, and it's just this magical place, man. So yeah, good for you, dude. Well, when you're in Reading, we could definitely make strike missions to Shasta. Would you work? Are you gonna work at a ski park again?
I don't know. Maybe go up there part time or something. Maybe not. Maybe just buy a pass. Have fun.
Right.
I don't know, man. Like since I'm not gonna be living up there, you know, that hour commute, probably, I don't know, dude.
Yeah, I feel you. That's a long drive. To fucking drive to and from Reading is a bitch. And that particular drive is a little bit stressful too, right? Like if there's water on the road, like going through the Shasta Lake corridor. I did that at night, driving an ambulance with a patient and a practitioner in the back without my glasses in the rain. And it was not a good, I did it. It was fine. Like, we're okay. You know, everything worked. Thank God. But bro, I mean, like in a torrential downpour, roads are really slick. You know, one of the first rains in a good amount of time, right? Fucking semi traffic on the corridor between Shasta and Reading when the economy is getting after it is a fucking thing to be seen. And Man, I either had to.
Yeah, it dumps like in that one section right there, like above Lakehead. Like, dude, I don't know why, but when it rains there, it dumps, and the water pools on the road a lot. So you can like hydroplane and shit.
I've never been so white knuckle driving.
Yeah, me neither.
A fucking ambulance for, you know, the company, you know, big, heavy, fucking rumbling, bumbling thing, you know, with like a serious patient in the back that we're transferring to, like Davis or something, you know, and I'm just like fucking like I know if I come into any turn with any kind of lateral momentum, like there's a chance that we're fucking skipping. I was just like, fuck. And then the semis are passing me. So I either have to draft off a semi and just perfectly stay with them, because the next fucking semi is coming right on our ass and they're doing like a Peloton thing, you know, or I have to stay a little bit faster than the semis and stay in front of a line where I'm going like 70. Yeah. That fucking area put some gray hairs on my head for sure, man.
Dude, yeah, man. Yeah, that's a brutal little stretch. But, yeah, I don't know. I'll probably just, like, I probably won't work up there. It depends. I don't know. Maybe, like, a day a week or something.
Do you miss patrolling? Did you patrol this last year?
No.
Yeah, do you miss it?
It was fun, you know. It was pretty fun. It was like a good thing to do because I was so close to the mountain. You know, if I lived super close to the mountain, I would do it. You know, but the commute really doesn't make sense, you know, because I'm going to be working. And then, like, my days off, like, I want to go freaking have fun with my homies and snowboard, not have to, you know, do courtesy rides or freaking bandage someone's broken leg. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I do that stuff at work. I don't want to have to work more and, you know.
I get it.
Rather just go have fun for, because, like, especially since this winter, freaking everything got closed down, you know. It's like, I got to get my riding in. Got to.
Right, right. The only way that we were able to afford bachelor passes were working up here. Fucking bachelor pass. Just a bachelor is $1,000.
Holy shit. The Icon was like 800. You know,
for and the what, what do you get with the Icon?
You get unlimited at like Squaw, Alpine, Mammoth, a couple other mountains that are close. There's some blackout days with the $800 one. You get like $1,000 pass as no blackouts, but then you get like a couple days at like so many mountains, like Jackson, freaking just a bunch of Colorado, Utah resorts, Montana. Like Wyoming, like you have so many days. Like you can even go to like up in the Canada, some resorts up there. So it's like if you can travel around, it's sick. But Squaw Alpine, like they don't offer anything else but the Icon. So obviously that's what I got. And I didn't go anywhere else with it. I just went to, I think I went to Alpine like one day. But yeah, I just Squaw basically. Which I mean, I've had some sick days up there at Squaw for sure. Like some awesome days this year that were super fun.
My preconceived notion is that the lift lines there are just killer, but you had good days.
Yeah, the lift lines, like, they can get bad, you know, at certain times. And, like, you know, like if they're opening KT-22, like, it's, like, one of their most famous chairs. You know, like, you got to get there pretty early in the morning, like, sit in line for, like, 3 hours to get, like, one of the, you know, first chairs. Right. Otherwise, every run that's good is chewed up that first, like, go around. By the time you get to the bottom and you get back up to the top, it's, like, there's already, like, 4 bomb holes and, like, the cliff you want to hit and stuff. So, I mean, that's the deal. But, like, it's a show too. So like you're going up the lift and you're just watching all these guys send it, like, cause the chair rides right next to the cliffs and stuff. So it's like, you get to see some sick shit as well.
Right.
You know, while is doing some sick shit.
Right. And there's a thriving community of rippers that ride Squaw. I get that.
Like, yeah, and that's why it's so cool, because you can, like, go ride, and then, like, you got your little pack of, like, 15 dudes or whatever that just, like, you know, like, one day I found, like, this one super sick little hit, you know, and then there's, like, 15 dudes hitting it, you know, and, like, double backflips and, like, sevens and, like, you know what I mean? Just, like, truck driver threes and switch fives and just, like, you just watch dude after dude after dude just, like, hit this thing and, like, all right, sweet, we're going to hit it again? Yeah, shoot it again. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
And it's like really fun. And then like you go to like different parts of the mountain, and then you just like, you know, as they open stuff, and then you're just like, it's so big, but it gets tracked out pretty quick. You know, you're not going to find a ton of fresh stuff, you know, like the next day. You can, if you like hike a lot and stuff, you can find some freshies like the day after or pow day. And some days they don't open the whole mountain, you know, because it's too dangerous or whatever. So, like, they'll, like, keep the upper mountain closed. And then, like, 2 days later, they'll open the upper mountain. So then everyone goes there.
Right.
But, I mean, yeah, like, I like to do that at school. I hang out with, like, all those crazy kids and do some crazy stuff. But I also like going to a chill mountain to where there's pow for days. There's no lines. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
And just hanging out with your homies, like hitting whatever you want as long as you want, because it's like unlimited, you know, drops. And like, that's what I would prefer, honestly, just having that intimate relationship, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I'd prefer.
I feel that. Yeah, man. Homewood was a real wonderful place. I skied Kirkwood a lot. Kirkwood's where I kind of grew up skiing.
Kirkwood's pretty badass.
Kirkwood's the shit, dude. Kirkwood is definitely the shit. The backside, chair six, the wall.
Yeah, there's some sick stuff there.
Shoots. And, you know, thinking through my relationship with skiing, the common thread is exploration. That's what I really get off on. It's like if I'm on a new, you know, slope, I'm already having fun, like, period. Like, just the, like, you know, learning the new place. That said, like, really learning a place is even better, right? Like really putting in the time at one lift or at one route up of Shasta or, you know, whatever it is, one beach, right, if you're surfing. There's something magical that happens there, dude. Like, right? Like,
yeah, I just love riding with friends that, like, that are like-minded and, like, a riding style, you know? Like, because, like, my riding style would be, I'd describe it as, like, not just charge down the hill to get to the bottom, like, as fast as I can, but, like, find as many little things to, like, jump off as I can on the way down. And that may take stopping and looking for a spot and then going and then jumping off it and then stopping and then looking up and then watching my homie hit it too. You know what I mean? It's kind of like leapfrogging, like down the mountain, like getting stoked on each other's little tricks and stuff. Like, doesn't have to be anything crazy. It could just be like, you know, a sweet stalefish grab or whatever, you know, but it's like, man, that was awesome. And just like having so much stoke down that same run, you know?
Right.
Right. I mean, I definitely love hauling ass, you know, every now and then I'll just bomb it, but I love just like kind of just like going a little slower and just kind of just like jumping off shit wherever.
I get it. What was the first experience of getting air that you had growing up that got you on that stoke?
Like on my snowboard?
Just in general.
No, jumping off cliffs.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I had a trampoline when I was younger. I guess that was the first, you know, just jumping around on the tramp. But then, yeah, jumping off cliffs at Whiskey Town. Definitely.
Well, Whiskey Town, specifically at Whiskey Town Lake? That's the bridge there?
Yeah, right by the bridge. There's little cliffs.
Okay.
Yeah.
What bridge exactly? The bridge when you're going west out of Redding that you're going to pass?
Yeah.
Three?
That big one, yeah.
Okay. Like near the Whiskey Town Dam?
No.
Okay, so I don't know where the bridge you're talking about is.
It's just on 299. It's like the only bridge on 299.
Okay, I'd have to think, but that's awesome, man. So what tricks did you learn growing up on a trampoline?
Backflips, like backflip 360s, side flips, front flip 360s, like, you know, all of those flips.
Did you ever try a double on a trampoline?
I'd have to have like a double bounce, right? You know? Right. I could do like backflips and a half.
Yeah.
Then I would need another double bounce to get a double. But I can do them now, like on the bigger trampolines, like at Woodward and stuff. I can do doubles on that for sure.
On the rectangular ones, the like gymnastic ones, the like ones with the springs. Yeah, I feel you.
The super tramp ones.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, that's what they're called, super tramps.
Well, they have like regular tramps there that are way better than like a normal trampoline. They're like 8x6 or something, maybe like 10x6.
Yeah.
But then they usually have like one super tramp that's like 12x12.
Oh shit.
And you just launch, dude, like things freaking gnarly.
That's awesome. Yeah,
it's so fun, dude. Like I always get hurt though, like every time I go. I always like mess up my big toe.
Oh, is that what it is? You roll it?
Dude, I don't know, dude, but every time I'm like hobbling out of woodwork is my freaking toe.
Ouch.
But yeah, I've seen like people break their arms on that trampoline, just all sorts of shit. Like you can get, like I get more hurt at Woodward than I do like snowboarding usually.
Woodward, I think, is one of the coolest things for adventure sports. The idea of we take these things seriously. They're not just, you know, kids play. And so we're gonna practice and get really good at them so that we can go send cliffs and do tricks and whatever, and that we've put in the time and the effort. I haven't been to Woodward and trained, but I would love to. When I was a little kid, like 9, maybe even like 7 or 8, some kid had a birthday party and it was at a fucking gymnastics gymnasium with a ball pit or a foam pit and a fucking just all of the cool things, right? And I had just broken my arm. So I couldn't go. And I was gutted. I was so fucking bummed. I still haven't like made up for that. But we had a trampoline too when we were little kids. I don't think I learned a front flip 360, a full twisting front, but I can do like a half twisting front. And I learned a full twisting back. And dude, I totally lose where I am in the air. I don't know where I am in the air when I do a full twisting back. I just throw it over my shoulder and just go that direction and then like fucking come out and land sometimes. But yeah, my buddy Nick had a trampoline in his backyard flush with the grass.
Oh yeah.
And dug it out. It was sick.
That's a good way to do it.
Dude, it was so fun. So we would play, we would play like horse for tricks, you know?
Oh yeah, 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 for sure. Yeah, Woodward is like so sick, dude. Like, if you want to get good at doing stuff, like, and you spend a lot of time at Woodward, like, you're gonna be good at whatever it is that you're trying to do, like skiing or snowboarding or, you know, because your air awareness just gets so dialed. You just know exactly where you are in the air. You know what I mean? And like, that's what it takes to be good at flying through the air, is like knowing how to manipulate your body while you're airborne. You know, I remember the first time I tried jumping on my snowboard, like I just ate shit like so many times because I didn't understand like how to fly through the air, you know, but you know, you eventually learn how to do it. It's really hard to learn on Shasta jumps though. Those things need some work.
Dude, like, the jumps at Bachelor this
jumping year? Jumping on Shasta's jumps?
No, fuck Shasta's jumps, dude.
I can hit them now and stuff. When I was, like, learning, dude, they were the worst.
You would love what Bachelor did this season in the parks because they got a contract with Woodward.
Oh,
so
nice.
Woodward is making a facility in Bachelor, and they're spending a ton of money. So this year they just branded all the parks under the Woodward banner, and they brought in whatever expertise from the Woodward side. Dude, I'm not the best aerialist, you know, like I could throw down a 360 if I'm like 100% confident and I've hit the jump a few times, and or if I'm just, you know, got liquid courage or whatever. But yeah, that's about where I draw the line. I know that I could do a backflip, but I would have to really know the jump and so forth. But my point is, the jumps this year at Bachelor were so good. There were so many different parks that it was everything from just rollovers that you could just get some air off of to giant, you know, 100-foot tabletops and everything in between. So, bro, it was so fun to just like hit the small jumps, hit the small jumps, hit the small jumps, like air out the small jumps, like, okay, hit the medium jumps, like, and just start feeling that feeling. I got some footage, and it's like, you're more developed as a you know, person doing tricks on a snowboard than I am on my skis, but it's so wonderful to have that feeling of like jumping, and then it's a different thing until you land the skiing, right? It's like, it's whatever you did on the takeoff, now just like deal with it and then ski away, right? Like that willingness to just like
fly. Yeah, it's like as you're going up the lip, you know, it's like you're like, wow, this is I can't see anything, you know, like those park jumps, you know what I mean? Like you go up the lip and you're like, you don't know, all you see is lip, you know, right. So you're totally blind, you know. So it's like it really takes a lot of like courage to hit those kind of jumps. Like it's kind of weird, but yeah, like. It's a cool feeling just like going off the lip of a jump and just being in the air, like, woo, in the air.
and like accelerating up, like people think that it's like, but it's, there's a launching feeling that feels really good, right? That like literally feels good. Like if you have muscle pain or tightness or all of that shit goes away real quick when you're in the air, right?
So yeah, you don't feel anything. Just air time, which is like the coolest feeling ever.
Right.
I don't know how to describe it, but it's awesome.
It's the disconnection of the human body from the grounding of the earth. So you're like literally in space when you jump off of the earth. And if you can like have a trajectory where instead of going immediately back down to the same place, if you're like gonna travel through the space and land somewhere else, you're like astral projecting. Like you're doing the thing that like mystics try to do psychologically. You're doing the thing that grace is, that like beauty is like a movement. Like things are artistic, I would argue, because they produce a movement in yourself, in your psyche, right? If something doesn't like make something happen internally, then it's not art. It's just a pattern, you feel me? So like, I think that what you do is a spiritual practice, jumping off of waterfalls, snowboarding in the way that you do. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, for sure. And like, it takes visualization too. So like, you know, before I do any of that stuff, like I do it in my mind first, you know? So it's like, it's like a meditation kind of, you know, like I'll like dream about doing snowboard tricks and shit like that, or like cliff jumping. And then like, I'll wake up and I'll be like, oh, okay, sweet. So like, I just have to do that. And then I'll think about it more, you know what I mean? But it's like, if I'm dreaming of it and then I go and do it, like that's such an amazing feeling that like I'm living my dreams. You know what I mean? Like it's just so cool to be able to think about something and then do it.
I think, and I'm sorry.
And like the more I think about it, the less scary it is when I go to do it, you know?
Right. That's
super important.
It has to be, in my opinion, that model, let's say, focusing, visualizing, dreaming, and then doing the thing is the correct model for accomplishing something difficult, as opposed to anything removed from one's own, like, like delving into the thing spiritually. Like you're in it if you're dreaming about it. And if you're feeling and then if you are dreaming the right thing, it's the thing that you want to do. Think about how many of us are doing that process with shit that they don't want to do.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's dreaming through trauma or, you know, some asshole at work or, you know, difficulties that they're going through, and they're doing that operation that allows you to achieve these like unbelievable heights of experience, jumping off a, you know, 100-foot waterfall or what have you, or doing, you know, a 720 off of it. Like, you're using that capacity of the human animal to be like a spiritual being for the right reason, in the way that it moves you forward into your chosen practice. I think that there's something to be said for that, man. I think that you're living consciously. And that arguably is bringing the unconscious, your dreams and so forth, conscious. And so that's awesome, man. That's gotta be a sign that you're on that one's on the right path when they are using their abstracting and cognitive and spiritual, you know, dialogue. Like they are choosing to do that. Because I know from experience, and I'm not trying to talk for anybody else, not you or anybody else, but like I've had that process that I think is intrinsic to the human nature, to the human condition, work against me, right? Oh, I've been thinking about this conversation, or this person's gonna, you know, do this bad thing to me, and I've been running it through my head. When I know that I can be thinking about that next big wave that I'm gonna drop in on, or that next powder run that I'm gonna be floating through with the sun shining, like I know I can put that spiritual energy towards those things. And I think that it takes concerted effort, and any way that we can build a framework around like protecting that function, like making that effort conscious, is worth it.
Yeah. And it helps like thinking about it before you go to sleep, like as you're falling asleep. If you think about it then, it helps put it in your mind when you're dreaming, I've realized.
How do you protect the sanctified space of, you know, the dream space or the thinking mind from negativity, from your own detracting voice that I would argue we all have, from one's own, you know, judgmental mind? What strategies, what perspectives do you have on dealing with that part of the equation?
Just by having just by like knowing how awesome it is to dream about that kind of stuff and to do that kind of stuff, just by like getting that enjoyment out of it produces more of that, you know. Sure. It's just like by loving it so much makes it happen, you know.
Right.
And that's it, really.
That focus, huh?
Just like getting enjoyment out of it, like loving it and looking forward to doing it again, you know, that's how it happens. Like sometimes like I'll have like other dreams, obviously, like about who knows what. Can't even remember most of my dreams, but you know, just by understanding what you love and what you want out of life, and kind of just happens. I don't know. I'm not much of a lucid dreamer, I don't think. You know, like my dreams, like they can feel really real, but when I wake up, like I know it's a dream, you know? So.
I lucid dream a lot. Like, yeah. not like, you know, more than the next person, but I've found that place where, and obviously you have too, in a really productive way, I would argue, that the dreaming space and the conscious space overlap. You know, and I think being able to navigate that effectively is a learned skill and a practice skill. And something that I'm willing to do that. But yeah, like one of the things that's been really intriguing to me in the last like 6 months, a year, when I've been trying to, you know, get more on track and buckle down and try to put more of my, you know, collective energies towards, you know, chosen goals. The more that I've found lectures and content online about the kind of, how would you say, the like hero's journey, spiritual path, and the relevance of dreaming in that process, right? Like facing the darkness, you know, understanding the existence of chaos. Like that is to say that any systematic representation of the world, whether it's theoretical physics or chemistry or some, you know, spiritual practice or religion or whatever science you happen to study diligently, is only a representation of the truth. And that the truth, the capital T truth, is just your life. And that's how you have access to what's actually real. And focusing on those things has allowed me to access more of those good traits that we spoke about earlier, where, you know, I think a deep dive into theory brings us to just compassion, just self-restraint, you know, discipline. Yeah, man, it's been really neat. Like Jordan Peterson is a good person to listen to if you're at all given to liking, you know, motivational shit or intellectual, you know, kind of lectures. He's really a good person to listen to. You know, I've listened to a lot of that shit, and I guess I'm interested in trying to get at in a question to you, but I don't know if I can formulate the question well enough. How you would describe the foundation of your link, your communion with that process, with the love that you have for the passions that are like if a young person comes to you and is asking you what to do with their life, and you're trying to put into words these things that we're speaking to, how do you speak to them?
Well, first they have to find something that they believe in that gives them joy, you know? And then they have to find other like individuals that share that same passion. And then it just happens, basically, you know? And, you know, it's just finding enjoyment in what you do, you know, finding love and, you know, being content with who you are is all a part of, you know, that journey.
Right. Right. I think that one of the things that you're touching on that's so important for myself, for everybody, I would argue, is that any narrative that takes a person away from valuing their own enjoyment is a false representation of the way that the world works. Like if a person sits there and argues that you've got to make X amount of dollars a year, or you have to achieve A or B or C to have some kind of, you know, good life, I just think that those people are really dangerous. And I think that the people like yourself, Scott, that are willing to stand by the truth of the fact, in my words, that following your own heart, believing in what you find value in that it has value, you know, and trusting your instincts, trusting your you know, your passions, your joys to, you know, bring you to other, you know, positive relationships, to enrich your life, you know, to bring meaning to what is essentially, you know, an unknown chaotic experience, right? Nobody understands consciousness. But we do understand joy and love and like these are not too difficult of abstractions to not be able to speak to. Like we all know what love is. And so like one of the great motivating feelings that I've had in the last like 10 years has been living my life in accordance with the reality that I can't live it for anybody else. I can't make you happy. As much as I'd like to, right? As much as I want to give you the fact that we're friends and I'm your brother, you know, and I've got your back. And if you need me, call me. Like, that's all real. But I know that no matter how much I want to like give you a hug if you need one, or like give you the right, you know, the right wisdom when you are asking for it. Not that you are, I'm not speaking to you. You feel me? It's always the person that's in charge of the trajectory of their life, their emotionality, the way that they respond to, you know, setbacks and trauma and difficulties. And like, that's helped me, right? And the thing that has been the next step of like internalizing that, working with that, you know, in accordance with my life, has been trying to learn how to communicate that. And I haven't gotten there yet, but I know how to talk around it. Like I know how to have us both look at it. And then that's why I like doing these conversations so much, because the hope is we can form the circuit, you know, where we're connecting, right? Because you can say whatever you want, you know? But there's also like the undercurrent. There's the fact that we're both connected to something that's undefinable and something that's unknowable, right? Like your consciousness, you know, and your perspective and your experience of life. Like that's brought to bear whenever you are sharing something personal, you know, whenever you're being yourself, right? And the dangerous thing that I see, like, I'm not given to being too cynical anymore. As much as I grew up like a lefty politically, I just see the utter waste of my energy when it comes to just debating politics and stuff. But I just see the soullessness in popular media and television, in politics and in advertising.
A lot of people in general.
A lot of
humans.
Yeah, man. And what that does for me is more fully ground my soul fullness for me as a protection, right? And then the next step, I can't see you, bud. You there? I was gonna say that the next step is to try to connect soulfully with others. But it looks like we lost Scott. Scott, you there, man? Okay, well, his phone might have died. That's a very real possibility. So we will connect soulfully as soon as possible. Thank you guys all for watching. I really appreciate your time. I hope you enjoyed me connecting with Scott Hansen. He's a great friend of mine, a really amazing dude, longtime firefighter, paramedic, ski patroller, and all around amazing human. So until next time, I hope you enjoyed our talk. Love you guys very much. More power to you. Sorry that I've got super bloodshot eyes, but we'll see you next time.